Okay, for the in-house marketing folks, who here is with like a big brand? Let's say like a Fortune 2000. Yes, sir. We have a question from the floor. Excuse me. Yes. It's okay. Like this? Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, so where were we? Big marketing people. Look, what marketing people, please, if you don't mind, hold your hand up again. All right, so you work in a corporation, and you're a marketing person, right? And so now what's the split? How many people? Leave your hands up if you say, like, you got 1,000 employees or more. Okay, and then smaller business, smaller medium. Okay, that's nice. That's nice. And who is doing, who's already, let's use YouTube as a surrogate for social media. Who's doing, who has videos, who's posted a video on YouTube? On Vimeo, excuse me. Who's using Vimeo? All right. You don't do it on YouTube? Okay, great. What do you do? I'm sorry. Do we owe you money? Have we not paid you yet? Hang on. Dale from Accounts Payable's back here. We'll get you something. Okay. Okay. All right. There's a nice little elevator pitch. All you need is a couple of PowerPoint slides, and you're ready for corporate. So, okay, yeah, that's definitely probably a better Vimeo play. Although I think people can find your video. I like Vimeo. The reason I like Vimeo better is because you can replace a video. You can upload. Once you find out that you've made a mistake, or when an auditor's come and you forgot to get something approved, no worries. You can just replace it. The URL stays the same. That's really nice. But people don't find you. It's a lot easier. The number one search engine, of course, is Google. The number two search engine, YouTube. So, which is Google, but it's a separate search engine. So, it's a lot easier for people to find your video there. All right. I'm sorry, I'm taking too much time. That's not right. We're starting early. But we got our survey done. Any other questions we should ask? Dave? Well, that's going to take the full hour, Dave, but I'm glad you asked. All right, so for Q&A, Austin here is running tech for us. Come on, let's give it up. And this is being podcast live in 37 different languages, so I have to speak slowly and translate on the fly, so it's going to take a while. But seriously, there is a microphone there, so if there is a question, we're happy to answer the question, but we need to get you to the microphone. So we'll try to do the Q&A toward the end. But if you want to, if there's a burning desire to ask a question, you know, feel free to. Just come up to the microphone, please. All right, so it looks like we've got a couple more minutes. Should we start now? Start early? I guess we could. you did that well, Dave will do a puppet show for us. Thank you. Thank you very much. I haven't had makeup yet. Look awesome. I may need a little touch-up. You got any rouge? Did you get anybody? No? I know that's a 30-year-old term. I get that. Anybody from Avon here? Okay. Yeah. You started this. All right. So I'll tell you what. I mean, can we start? Or should we wait? Let's start. Because we got... There is a two-drink minimum. Thank you. Look, we have an hour to cover, and I only got 5 minutes of material. So we won't need the full time. But listen, my name let's go ahead and start. Is that all right? My name is Tim Washer, and I work at Cisco. I think I'd rather have a frank conversation and not represent my company today, just to try to avoid a few of fireable offenses, because that will happen. So, but what I'd like to do is talk to you about some of the things we've learned in social media, and how some things that have worked well for us, some things that haven't worked well. And I hope maybe we can come up with a couple of new ideas that everybody, if you could start maybe doing something new, trying something new, in the next week. So it looks like everybody is already using video right now and already using YouTube or Vimeo, right? But is there anybody here who hasn't experimented yet with a video? Okay, we have one person, two. We got a couple of people. Okay, here's what we're going to do. At the end of this, I hope we'll walk away and you'll have something. You'll have a good idea, or maybe something you could even film here, all right? Because we're going to show some very simple things, some really simple things to do that I think will make a difference. And what else? I think there are a few other things to say, but that's not it. It'll come up later. Let's get started. So this is basically how to, there's a title there. You've read that, right? It's been up for a while. The title I like better is The Business Case for Nonsense, because I do think I've done some work in comedy, and just I've seen how successful just being absurd and ridiculous can be. And I think there's a room for that. I think there is room to use that in corporate social media. So even in B2B. And we all kind of understand that consumer brands can get away with this. Consumer brands can be funny, right? So let's just look at an example here.
Happy birthday, Dad.
Hey, thanks, son. This is a big one. 35.
35. Wow. It's hard to believe I'll be there myself in
4 years.
4 years.
Look, I figured you would have asked me about this by now, but I know you're not really that good at math.
What are you getting at, Dad?
I'm not your real father.
You almost had me that time. You almost had me. Not my dad.
What next?
We're not black?
So you can picture that in a consumer brand. But for some reason, B2B brands think, you know, we couldn't do something that silly, all right? And I think part of the reason is that the purchase price is much higher. If you're selling $1 million mainframe and the decision-making cycle, the selling cycle is 18 to 24 months, it's going to take, you just feel like you need to be more buttoned up and you have to share information and that decisions are going to be made on facts. And they do play a little bit more of a role there, but I'm a big believer that decisions are made emotionally. So the thing is, though, you have to look at the data, even in B2B. And the market research shows that 73% of all people who read B2B blogs are, in fact, people. All right? The most important thing about this data point is it's made up. So let's start there. But you get the point. In social media, you're trying to connect with other people, folks who read blogs, folks who still like to watch a video. They'll still enjoy that, and you are representing the brand, and you do have to be a good steward of the brand, but it can be done with humor. That's all I'm saying. And the reason I'm pushing humor so hard is because it's a wonderful way to simplify the message. And I'll get into this a little bit later, but I guess I'm getting ahead of myself here. But it really, it just can give you a huge payoff, particularly in B2B, because it's so unexpected. So, I worked at and I guess I kind of said this. You know, we're simple beings. Humans, we all like simple. I mean, look how successful Apple has been with their products. One of the reasons they work and they resonate is because they're simple. Now, here's the thing. A lot of times at the office, we don't want to, we actually make things more complex than they need to be, because we're afraid of looking simple. Look, I get that. I mean, once I started doing, we're insecure people. I mean, once I started doing stand-up in New York, I became really well aware of how insecure I am. All right? I mean, it becomes, and try stand-up comedy. I mean, if you don't think you're insecure, go do some stand-up, and you'll learn. You also learn how insecure everybody else is. So, you know, we're all in this together. But I do think there are two big challenges. There are a couple of challenges. This is one of them. Just we feel like we need to be complex and we need to say everything. You don't. I worked at a company before where I am now. It's a large tech company. The attorneys don't want me to mention the name, but it was an international business machines company. And we worked on a simplification process. How can we work together to simplify our communications and our PowerPoint? And this is what we came up with. So just take a few minutes and read that. I know maybe not everybody in the back could read that, but The key data is really on the bottom, those bottom boxes there. Now, that is granted, that's a negative 17-point font, but it is Helvetica, so it should be somewhat easy to read. Listen, this is an actual chart. Now, I've added a few things to it just for kicks, but it's an actual chart. This is the urge you're going to have to fight, so I want to spend a little bit of time on being simple here. But the first challenge, when you call a process, well, if you take the word simple, you know, and more than double the number of syllables in the word, you really don't have a strong command of what the meaning is. But this is a real word. I mean, this happens. And so this is your challenge, all right, is to deal with this. So I've came to the conclusion after sitting through PowerPoint slides, there's actually an inverse correlation to the number of slides you have in your presentation and your knowledge of the topic, all right? And it's serious. It's a challenge we all face. I think it was Blaise Pascal who said, he was writing a letter to a friend. He said, sorry for writing you such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one. It takes time, and it takes work to edit and get it down to the essence. And sometimes we just don't do that in corporate, and it's a challenge in social media. This is one of the worst offenders right here. I'm kidding. Read his book. So look.
Only 200 pages.
I do. That's right. You know, it's 200 pages. The Cliff Notes are 350, though, which is. I'm going to wait for the movie. There's probably only exception. I want to audition for the part. Look, it's okay to use a slide like this, like if you're meeting with a small group or one-on-one. That's all right, you know, when they have time to look at this. But again, you want to pick the right, you know, PowerPoint's not for everything. I was in a discussion before I left with my wife, and I probably shouldn't have used the PowerPoint chart. So this should have just been handled. Some things are better verbal. You know, handle it verbally, you know, particularly if the counselor's in your meeting. You know, you don't want to, that's another session I'm doing later on today. The group think, this is another challenge. It's another obstacle, a hurdle you're going to have to deal with, and it's a tough one. And particularly if social media and the corporate, for you folks in corporate, if you sit in the marketing function, you're going to have even more of a challenge because marketing, every fiber of our being is to talk about our product and tell you how awesome it is. And brag about it. And that doesn't work. I don't think that works well on YouTube. You know, you can't take a brochure and turn it into a YouTube script. I've been asked to do that before. It doesn't work. So I want to just show you a quick example here of how sometimes we can just get thinking all the same.
Take a look at this footage from today of two Republican senators grilling Alito.
Judge Alito, your name is Samuel Alito. Is that right?
That's correct, Senator.
Okay, let's get into things here. Could you tilt your head ever so slightly to the right? Good. Now, could you tilt it even more to the right? Good. Now, could you tilt it just a tiny bit more to the right?
I like him.
I like him, too.
That's very good. That's very good.
We'll skip that one. This happens in... I think it's one of the biggest challenges. One, you got to fight to be simple. You really got to work at that. And then two, you also have to make a case of like, look, let's not all think the same way, and let's try something new. And there is inertia there. And just respect that and be aware of it when you start off in doing some of these projects. So let me show you a few examples. This is one that we did at IBM. It's called This Is Where I Work. And I'd offer some critique here. I don't like talking bad about anybody behind their back. So actually, I invited George to be here today, but I don't think he's here. Is he? No. Listen, this is so. All we did is we just asked people, don't do video. Just make a slideshow. Just get a camera. You know, the camera on your phone. Take pictures. And you have to give. If you give people, it's very hard to come up with a concept. And I'll talk a little bit about that later about some ideas on coming up with a concept, particularly comedy. But it's hard to for people to like, I don't know what to talk about. That's probably one of the first objections when you get in trying to recruit people. You know, I don't know what to say. Or people, again, they feel insecure. So give them something foolproof to do. So we did a series, This Is Where I Work. And it's just like most people have a place where they work, right? I mean, that covers about 100% of folks. We haven't done the data, the market research yet, but I'll do that. You've seen my results earlier. You know I care about the numbers. We just ask people, just look, whether you're working at home or wherever you are, go take a photo. Take a photo of your cube, photo of the person sitting next to you. You know, if you're working in, you know, this is Ireland or Munich or whatever, get the skyline for us, the Hofbrauhaus, you know, things that we can relate to in the rest of the world. And just put, you know, 7, 8, 10 photos together and then narrate it and record it in, you know, inside, so you don't have to worry about audio now. Audio is not a big deal. You don't need a fancy mic. You can do it on your computer with a $90 USB mic or the one built in. You also have software built in. You have either iMovie that's free, or you have, if you have a PC at IBM, most of us had PCs back then, you have a Windows Movie Maker, which works fine for slideshows. And it's just a very simple, it was such a simple thing. And we were able to, in the corporate office, we were in Armonk, we were able to, all these people submitted these. And, you know, what, the first thing you do is reduce everybody's risk. You just say, listen, we're going to post these internally on the intranet, okay? And some of them we went back and reworked, but we also found who the storytellers were, you know, who had a natural knack for telling story. It's a great way to kind of help us recruit other folks to help us in other projects. Authenticity. This is an important part of being human, and it's a buzzword now. You've seen all these books written about it, about people who claim to tell you we can help you be authentic or at least appear to be authentic. And you get a lot of that stuff, and it's a challenge. Again, I think in corporate video, because the people who have the budget, they have an agenda. You know, we need to promote this product or service. So there's just challenges to that. And I'll talk to you a little bit about one approach that works. But, you know, with Sarbanes-Oxley, now you hear about being trans. Everybody wants to be transparent. It's transparency. That's another buzzword, you know. And if you can't be transparent, be translucent. It's a starting point. It's a step, Dave. You got to work into it. So, look, I just want to show you an example. Here's a good example of a marketer who's selling a product. You know, they put a nice, fancy French name, Café du Monde. They call these beignets. They take these beautiful shots of these. And they're selling you a specific product. Now, here's another marketer who may be a little bit more transparent. They're just going to tell you this is what the product is. It's fried dough. That's what you're eating. That's not really a story. Look, let me go into... Let me go into, like, some examples now, okay, if that's all right, unless there are any questions. No. I like to program. The way I like to think about programming, my expertise, a lot of people read tremendous amounts of this, you know, about the industry. I watch a lot of TV, just being honest. And that's a great, listen, TV works. It's a good format. And so we came up with this idea. A woman on our team, Deborah Strickland, suggested, hey, Angela is going to make a tour and go visit some of our customers in Asia Pacific. Why don't we do a little travelogue? And I was like, great. Now, Angela had not used video before. So I think this is important. I drove up to Boston, and I said, look, let's shoot a video. And I took a flip, and I just said, listen, here are just a couple things you need to avoid. You know, watch out for noise. Actually, Lynn Graff was telling me a good idea the other day that, like, if there is a lot of noise in the background, pan over and show people coming in and out of the door, you know, and then the audience is cool with that. With Angela, what I just suggested is, like, well, here's what we did. We said, listen, I talked to her on the phone. Blogging 101. First question you should ask anybody when you're trying to get them to blog, what are you passionate about? What excites you? What do you enjoy doing outside of work? And then follow up with a cliche, what keeps you up at night? You just have to ask that question if you're in there. I'm kidding. That's not a sales question. So, 2-drink minimum, right?
Exactly.
They find out what they're interested in. And so Angela, she says, I'm a foodie. I love food. And the one thing I love most about going to AP is all, you know, eating all the wonderful food there. And I said, well, there's your show. You know, open up every time with some shots of, like, once you get to the airport or, you know, again, some just interesting shots. Then go tell us, go to the restaurant, shoot. Film the restaurant, you know, and just some, here's the food, here's what I'm eating. Then go back to your hotel. You know, at the end of the day where it's quiet in your hotel room, just turn the camera on you and just have a conversation like you would when you call home and talk to your family. You know, when you talk to your husband and tell him what you did, that's the tone of the conversation. It's just that simple. I said, you know, and try to avoid work. Don't talk about our product and don't mention our company name, because I think once people hear that, they're like, okay, you're marketing to me. The other thing is I just said, you know, try not to say collaboration or innovation or anything that rhymes with anything like that, you know? Because for me, when I'm listening to that, as soon as I hear those words, it's just like, oh, man, you lost me, you know? It feels like you're just talking nonsense. Some of those words just don't mean anything anymore, and I'd rather hear her story about what she's doing. So what she did, this is pretty cool. So we posted this up in our mobility community, and we have a very small community. It's like 300 people on there because we only have about 30 customers. I work in a service provider group, and we sell high-end product carrier-grade routers, you know, that are $500,000 to AT&T and Verizon. So we have a limited community. But somebody picked this up. They saw it on the mobility community, and they posted it on their Facebook. This is a guy from a design firm in San Francisco. And I mean, he captures what we were trying to do. What a great way to reach out to fellow employees and partners and customers. She talks about technology, product, food, and Malaysian hip-hop. It's really cool. Now, you don't have to, traveling internationally, of course, was pretty cool. But, I mean, that adds something to the video. But you can do it locally. I mean, you don't have to. You can just get out of the office and put a video together. You just, your favorite show, Man vs. Food. Come on. Let's be honest here. Put those hands up. You know, do a man. You can fit that in, you know. And if your company's too small to have some cool stories, you know, look at your partners or your suppliers, you know, your customers, and see if you can partner on a video with them. So I'm a big believer in story trumps messaging. And if you're in marketing, you'll always have, I mean, it is our job, right? We have to get the word out there. But I think in social media, you need to allow yourself to like, look, let's go build an audience first. And then with an interesting story, and then we'll invite them into the rest of our community. I really think social media should be protected that way. And the blogs should there, we do have blogs about our products, but we also have blogs about, you know, just interesting stuff. If you don't have any interesting content to share, show a shark. Okay, that's the first rule in social media. I hope all of you know that. I trust all of you know that. So,
excuse me, does it matter what type of shark?
It does. It has to be a hammerhead shark. That's a good question, Jeff. That's right. Yes, I think so. Kittens are done, man. Kittens are over with. No offense to any kitten lovers in here. I love kittens. Not really. I'm not a cat guy. I'm sorry. Allergies. Look, what we did, we started this new series where we're just, like, what we do is, like I said, we build these big products that help run the network, okay, the internet and, you know, the mobile network, et cetera. That's kind of our thing. But instead of talking about those products, we're starting a new series where we focus on the network. And we're just talking about, we're making this network the hero in our story. You know, that's the protagonist. And so I went to an aquarium and I interviewed the guy there. He was the director of communications. I said, listen, I want to do a video. I'm not going to mention my product, but I want to talk to you about how you are using the network and mobile and social media to help, you know, service the folks who come to the aquarium. And it was great. I mean, it's interesting, though. We shot it first. Here's a lesson I learned. I had a guy, I paid $1,500. I got a friend from church who's a director of photography for television, you know, he does discovery stuff all the time. But he's like, look, I'll fit it in. That's fine. If I have a day when I'm not shooting, I can go do it. And I'll edit it for you too. And I was like, wow. I mean, you can get students. You go over to the film school here before you leave. Meet a professor and say, I want to talk to your students. I want to hire somebody for an internship program. Who are your best seniors, storytellers? And let me know if they'd be willing to do an internship. And look, you start off with a project and say, look, we're going to do something. Listen, I have no money. You know, let's do it. And if we end up putting it on YouTube, I'll give you $500, $1,000. Students would love that. And if not, you got something for your reel. So anyway, it's a great way to find awesome storytellers, amazing storytellers, you know, who just, they're not discovered yet. So, but get them while they're not discovered. Because the price will go up. The first video I did was with my buddy Scott Teams, and we did something on the mainframe in 2004. And I said, look, I can't get this approved. I'll pay you $400 out of my own pocket to do it. He said, sure, I'll do it. And in 2009, he won South by Southwest Best Film. And he was here Friday night. They invited him back to show the film. He's a little bit more pricey now. So, get people early. Here's one other. So, again, you know, sharks, mollusks, really anything underwater is good. This is a documentary. We created a little documentary, and I really wanted to pitch this. I thought we had a shot at getting some really cool stories and showing them to the Discovery Channel, pitching it to the History Channel or PBS or something like that. Put together like 46 minutes of content, make it interesting, and, you know, again, not mention our product, not selling anything, but I ran into some red tape, and it just seemed like it would be a challenge, and I'd lose control of the story, and I said, let's just put it up on YouTube. So, look, let me show, let's see if this will work. Austin, I didn't ask you, can I go to YouTube? All right, let's see if this works here. I'm not hardwired, so it may take a second. But we ended up just cutting it up in kind of these long chunks and putting it up on YouTube. And I'll tell you what we learned. This went up, I think, Friday. We made it public. Or maybe it's not up yet. So I'll have to act it out.
I do a lot of work in Africa. I was out one weekend.
All right. Yeah, I thought I had these all pre-buffered. Apparently not. So, do we have a hard line?
And driving around, and I was way out in the country, way out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, I did have it up. Thanks, Dave. Smartest man in the room. Okay.
I do a lot of work in Africa. I was out one weekend driving around, and I was way out in the country, way out in the middle of nowhere. I came to an intersection. It was two dirt roads, and I came to this intersection. And over there in that field, there was a shipping container. A shipping, you know, what you see in a port. And I kind of looked over, and a person walked out of it. And another person walked into it. This container was the local cellular office where you could buy a phone, get your card recharged, turn your phone in for repair, just talk to somebody about a problem if you wanted to. If you hopped over the counter, there was a wall. Behind that wall was the local cellular switch that provided service for this area, and just outside the shipping container was a mast, a radio mast, that provided a wireless connection back to the nearest exchange or central office. When I talked to people at the local cellular company, what I learned was that they went to one of the big shipping companies on the coast over at Durban, over on the east coast of South Africa, and they said, we need 500 or 600 of these containers, and we need you to put them in all of these locations, and we don't want to pay for them. And of course, the company said, and this is good for me because, and they said, well, because we're going to use them for housing infrastructure for telecommunications. We're going to give people telephony, we're going to give them internet access. And the reason we're going to do that is because it will enable the growth of business. When we enable the growth of business, it also enables the growth of crafts and art and light manufacturing, all of which have to be shipped. And the company said, how many do you need and where would you like them?
That's all I want to share. You get the idea. We found some cool stories. Again, our company's not mentioned there at all, but the hero is the network, you know. And then if we can get folks excited about the network and try to better understand the network, that's our goal here. And if it makes our customers, who are the service providers of the world, look good, that's a good thing for us. And so we said, look, let's try this. Let's see what happens. And we've had some good success. Like I said, this went up Friday, and it has, you know, no views yet. You have to promote stuff. You got to get on blogs. We've experimented doing some Facebook ads and stuff, stumble upon. We can talk about that later. But you do have to promote it. Even if you're not paying for it, you have to get it out to folks. So we haven't done that. That's not even in a blog. I think that goes into a blog this afternoon, I believe. Oh, I was supposed to do that, actually. Could we take a break? So that's it. And this is, I know it's actually, there's a decent production value in this, but you know what? Each of these videos, it cost us about what we spend on an infographic, okay? A little bit more, maybe an infographic a half. The company not like we spend talk too much about dollars, so I just have to be somewhat vague. But my point is, you can pull this off. You know, again, if you can find inexpensive crews who know how to tell stories. And the guy, this is Steve Shepard. He's a buddy of mine. He doesn't work for Cisco. He's a blogger for us. And, you know, he's a contributor on our blog. And we asked him if we wanted to do this. He said, sure. And so we had a good time with it. I think that was all. But it's done well. Like, we won. We submitted this, and we won second place in the B2B Magazine's Best Corporate Blog for last year. And because the series started last year. And we're starting to get some play. It was shown at Mobile World Congress which is, again, for us, for our community, it's a huge deal. And it got a standing ovation because those are all, that's our market. That's, you know, and so it's going to matter to them. So the thing is, your story, while maybe it's not good enough for TV, this wasn't, it matters to the people you're trying to influence. So it's fine. You may think a story about the network, who's going to be interested in that? Now, I showed this. I was speaking at a university. I think it was in Beijing Thursday. No, it's College Station. So, and the students, they were like, dude, what are you doing with this? We don't get it. And that's fine. It's not going to work. And like I said, it's not going to blow up on YouTube, right? It's not for these 23, 24-year-olds. We hope they get some out of the story. But if it doesn't resonate with them, that's okay. That's not our market. So let me show you. But this tone, one thing we've learned is that what works on YouTube is entertainment. That's what works. Now, that's part of our goal. You will always be asked to get views. How many views did the video get? How many, you know. And you have to kind of build your case around that. And you talk about, here's the market we're going after. Listen, I've been married 15 years, and one thing I've learned as a husband, to be successful, you need to set expectations low. So that's just another giveaway, all right? I'm just trying to help here in a couple of different ways. Tell people, you know, look, we're going after a very focused community. We're hoping that maybe a couple of our influencers will tweet this. And you could probably pull that off. And you know, suggest that, and most people will say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, great, here's the money. And they go do it. So for YouTube, though, we're trying something new. And this, I think we took one of these stories, again, about the innovation of the network, and we made it a lot more fun. And this is not up yet either. Let's see here. Let me go back to the PowerPoint. Please hold.
Lauded throughout history for their genius and charm, the inventors of the telecom network created what is revered as the largest and most reliable machine ever built. These are the extraordinary tales of network pioneers. In 1888, one unlikely telecom hero emerged. Allman Stroger was an undertaker. He was also a bit of a tinkerer and a talented part-time inventor. Stroger began to notice that business at his funeral home was starting to decline. It wasn't because the death rate had dropped. His business was just getting fewer calls. At that time, all calls had to go through the town's operator. So when a call for a funeral home came in, she would say, "I'm so sorry. Let me connect you to the undertaker." But where she connected the call was completely up to her. As it turned out, the town's operator was married to Stroger's competitor. And when a call came in for the undertaker, she connected the person to her husband and not to Stroger. Well, Stroger looked at that and said, "That's not fair." So he set out to create a device that would take control out of the hands of the operator. Ingenious and simple, the automatic telephone exchange was the first mechanical device that allowed a customer to dial a number directly, prying control from the operator, allowing the customer to have choice, and catapulting Stroger to the top of the undertaker industry.
Dave, that's it? Is that okay? Well, we failed. That's a true story. I was hoping. This is a challenge. When you're going to have fun with it, you know, you got to let the audience know what's factual here. And so I thought by putting in the shots, the actual photos from the U.S. Patent Office, and some of the photos of the sketches, we'd kind of get you to believe along with us. We also did. We took out. That's kind of a director's cut. The opening was a little over the top, and we toned that down a bit. Oh, is that right? Okay, good. I won't ask next time. That's right. I won't ask online. Because I had a question at the end. Do you believe this is true? And now, I'm kidding. But good. Okay, thank you. Anyway, that's one that is not consistent with our brand values because we don't do hand-drawn animations anymore. So we did not post this, again, out of respect and trying to be a good steward of our brand values. We didn't put this on the corporate YouTube site. Steve Shepard posted it on his site, and now we've embedded it into a blog, and it works. But it doesn't pop up with the other videos from our company, and so it doesn't, you know, it also doesn't have our logo in there. So I'm hoping this will be a success, and we can go back and make the case and say, hey, why don't we rethink, you know, doing some fun things here? All right, so listen, let me get into why I use humor. Let me talk about a few things there. But those, again, that's a cool story. It's a true story, and it's a cool story. And I think that's a lot of what the nut you got to crack is go find cool stories that aren't necessarily about your product, but about your industry, you know, that impact others in your industry and that are fascinating. So it just, I mean, it's research, you know, you just got to dig a little bit. So why use humor? Look, it evokes a positive emotion, okay? That's what so much of branding is trying to get people to have a positive relationship with your brand, and advertising is trying to create a positive emotion connected to your brand. It cuts through the noise. Look, on YouTube, I don't know how many videos there are. Has anybody counted recently? But I do know the latest stats, I think, is like 60 hours of video content is being uploaded every minute to YouTube. So now look at all the blogs. Just there's a lot of noise out there. And so humor is one of the best ways to cut through it. It humanizes the brand, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But the detail, the idea is you know, if people see you as having fun and actually, I think humor is a very human quality. I think we're the only people. There's a group of chimpanzees who have told knock knock jokes, but other than that, it's really just humans. So it's a good way to just say, listen, just forget about the big brand you're looking at. If I can make you laugh, you kind of get an idea there's a person behind it all. And I think it's a gift. Listen, I'm just saying this is a small part. Just experiment. Take 5% of your budget this year and say, you know what, let's play with this and let's have fun with it and see what happens. I mean, that's what we do. And don't necessarily put a call to action in here, buy this now. You know, operators are standing by at the end. Try not doing that. Just have fun with it and see what happens. People appreciate that. It's a gift to your audience. It's saying, listen, I hope this is entertaining. If you don't think it's entertaining, you know, we tried. You know, we have other stuff for you. That's the gift, see? It's a picture. That's from another. That's Grace. That's Rembrandt's The Return of the Prodigal Son, which is probably one of the best stories of Grace that I know. And I just think, it's just completely just, here's the deal. If you make people laugh and they get to know you and they remember that people are actually behind the call center, you know, the next time something goes wrong, they're a little bit more likely to give you a break, okay? And not just think this is some big evil company, but think, look, there are people there too who are also trying to have fun with us. So here, I put in a few bullet points here for those of you in corporate marketing. I want you to feel comfortable, all right? So... Can you read that? This is just a few simple steps for an approach here. Look, always begin, I think, with a marketing strategy if you're in marketing. You know, look at the marketing strategy and see where humor fits in. You know, you don't want to be seen as kind of a maverick and the crazy guy and the, you know, funny boy. I'm still trying to get rid of that nickname. But you don't want people to call you that. You want to say, listen, I'm here to help. How can I help the ordained marketing plan? Look at that and see if there's a task on there that you could help with a comedy video. Map it to the marketing plan. Set expectations. Look, we did at one company. I won't mention which one it was, but we told executives, "Listen, we will do that. We got a request. We said, sure, we'll do this, but it's not going to work, and you're going to get a lot of negative feedback." And the executives knew that. And then I reminded them again, there's going to be some tough, harsh criticism online, okay? And I showed them some examples of what it would look like. Well, let's go do it. So we did it, and guess what happened? You know, I mean, we did get some good feedback. We got some good coverage from press, but we also got some negative feedback. And they were like, let's shut it down. Shut it down. Who had this idea anyway, you know? So just remind people, listen, setting expectations, letting people know, listen, there will be, it's the internet. People are anonymous. There's going to be negative feedback. You know, remind them of that. But listen, once them having the knowledge and then going through the experience and sweating it out when they see those negative comments on the blog, they're two very different things. So just be careful, but remind people there's going to be criticism. There always is. Build trust. I'll talk about that in a minute. But that's key. You got to let people get to know you and earn your stripes. You know, don't just show up and say, look, I know we haven't met yet, but I'd like $20,000, $10,000 to do a comedy video. That's not a good approach. I've tried three times. It's not a good approach. the where of the committee. I want to talk to you about that because that's an important one as well. And then audience test it. So let's see. I think this is, look, when you build trust, anybody ever been on a conference call? You guys are probably a few people, one, two. I've worked at, I talk with people all the time and I've never met them. And if you can, if you get the travel budget, which I know is not easy, but if you can, get the travel budget, go buy them a cup of coffee, you know, if they drink coffee. And it has to be a good cup of coffee. I want to be clear. It's not Sanka, okay, because people have tried this. That doesn't work. But coffee, that's just a pretty picture I like. Look, coffee, just sit down with people and meet them in person. Take the time. People are grateful if you take the time to go visit with them and meet them in person, in real life, as the kids say. Or what's the abbreviation for in real life? I'm kidding. Thank you. I couldn't figure it out, but I knew it was something like that. LOL. Thank you, Jeff. I don't know what you're talking about. A little bit, but that doesn't take much. I did ask you to heckle, and now I'm regretting that. Okay. So, we... Thank you, Dave. So, what was I talking about? Coffee? We were talking about coffee. That's a safe topic. Most of it's grown in Colombia. And the GDP there... Oh, wait, I don't have any facts. Just go meet people and get to know them and listen first. This is another thing we don't do enough, is listen. I'm rambling on too much here. I should be quiet and listen. But we need to listen more. What are your concerns? What would you like to get done? And how can I help? And then try it. Again, it doesn't have to be humor. I'd start off with some other video like we showed, the Travel Channel thing, you know, something just with a flip cam. But do something different. Just try. Ann Hanley says, just try harder. Does anybody know Ann Hanley? Okay. There. There she is. Beware the committee. Your book's coming up here, too. So here's my... Here's the challenge with the committee here. Look, I want to just show you. Let's just walk through. This is what every committee looks like in the corporate world. So I'm wondering, I mean, do you have to, like a lot of times, I better not make that comment, but it's a nice, diverse committee. And I'm wondering if a committee like that, I mean, if it's a sole proprietorship, do they have a committee that looks like that? Just one person there, but somehow they've managed to cover. Anyway, but here, let me just look at the different roles here of how it helps us think about how a committee works. You have a facilitator, a scribe, a timekeeper, and a scapegoat. So these are functions of every committee. Listen, as a man who's been in way too many meetings, okay, not talking about any company in particular, committees are about reducing risk and taking credit for somebody else's idea. That's what happens, okay? This is off the record. This is between us. Please don't tweet it. I didn't say it. That's what happens in many committee meetings, okay? Now, unless you're meeting with a committee at an agency or a committee of artistic people, okay, they're probably not going to contribute too many good ideas to your comedy, okay? You know, Helen in accounts payable, she's awesome at her job, but you know what? She doesn't know how to write a setup to a joke, I'm guessing. Just please be aware of that. You know, this is part of our function. For those of you in corporate world, you have to go through this process. There's an approval process that has to take place. Be friends with everybody and be cordial and polite and professional. But just remember, okay, they have a very different agenda than you do in getting a comedy approved. Or just something different, you know, not just a comedy, but just something different. So the first comedy we did, we didn't do a committee. I pitched the idea. Nine people, I think it's like seven people told me no. This is, what is IBM, man. We don't do humor here. And so I'd just gotten the job. I'd been there like 4 months. You know, I didn't want to get fired. And not for that. And I just was quiet about it. I didn't say anything. And I mean, I really was. I waited 2 weeks. And then you know what I did? I just wrote the script. And then I found somebody. Here, this is key. Find somebody who's a champion. One who's a vice president. So he had the respect in the organization. He's been successful. People let him try wacky ideas. Two, he believed in humor. You know, he likes comedy. So he was the perfect fit. So I knew he'd be a champion for this thing. You know, and he has the same immature type of sense of humor that I do. And so I knew there was a fit there. So that's just the two of us. We went and did it, and then we went and produced it, and then we came back and we sold it after it was done. Look, that's one thing. That's one reason I'm suggesting keep the cost low or zero if you can. because it's best if you can go produce it and show somebody. It's hard to read a comedy on pages. You know, if you hand somebody a script, it's very difficult. Even people in the film industry, sometimes you share a script and they'll look at it and they're like, I don't get it. And you do need to express yourself sometimes just by producing the video. You need good people to do it too, but you can find good people. The documentary guy, there's a guy who's, I think he's probably 25, Bob Perkins, is editing our documentary for us. He just won the Super Bowl thing. You know that Sling Baby deal? He edited that commercial. So again, his rate's going to go up. I can't afford him anymore, so you should call him. He's a good guy. But start off with people who are young and are extremely gifted, but just have it. And the way to get that, like I said, go to a film school, talk to a professor, say, who are your best storytellers? Get a good editor. Like I tried one time at one company. I wrote a script. They're like, great, you know what? We got a video guy. We got a video guy for you, so we'll save some headache and some money. This guy can do it. Is he a good guy? Oh, he shoots our town halls all the time. He's awesome. No. You know, listen, have you edited comedy before? Listen, if you're going to get somebody, you need a comedy writer. Unless you can write comedy, you do need a comedy writer, but you also need someone who can edit comedy. And everybody will tell you, you know, you talk to a vendor, can I edit? Sure. Of course we can edit comedy. Please show me your reel, you know, and just, again, be polite and say, look, this is, if you don't think it's funny, their reel is what they're going to produce. You know, it's going to be that kind of comedy. So just say, listen, this is not the right fit of what we're looking for here, you know, and then call Wes Anderson. It's going to cost you a little bit more. I want to talk about, it looks like a lot of people weren't on the, haven't been to committee meetings, so I do want to talk a little bit about the language and what happens in the committee meeting. Okay, so let me just you'll have an executive say something. This is what this means. For those of you who haven't been in a meeting, I just want to help you, okay? You got to translate these things. If somebody says, I'd like to build on what Larry says, that's like, let's talk about me now. Okay, that's what that means. Let me show, I think, one more. When somebody says, may I be honest with you? Until this moment, our relationship has been a lie, all right? That's what they're saying. So you just got to go in there. Oh, there's one more. Larry, I value your input. HR said I had to include you. So it's good to know these things. All right, for you kids who haven't been in a meeting yet, someday you'll get your chance, okay? Maybe I can try to get through this and show a video and try to do it in like 10 minutes maybe, and we can do Q&A if anybody has questions. Let me talk about how we created some concepts, just to give you an idea, and then how we measure ROI. Like I said, everybody will always, how many hits did it get? Try to, you know, before you even produce the video, before you get the budget, start guiding people into thinking differently, you know, about just measuring the views. So, look, if we get 3 or 4 bloggers to post this on their blog or to tweet it, you know, that shows we've had influence on the conversation. And then get everybody to agree to it, and then get your $5,000 and go start off on the low end. This is one we did for a router. This is about it can be $250,000 router, it can be $1 million. Again, it's for the big carriers. I doubt, does anybody have one of these at home? Okay, I didn't think so. So we were trying to think of, look, what's interesting? What is interesting about this router? And there's nothing. We looked. We talked to the engineers. We don't have that. So you kind of got to expand. Well, what else could we do? Broaden the story up a bit, you know? So we thought, well, when are we launching it? It's on February 9th is when we're launching it. We should, you know, it's just about marketing positioning. This should be the perfect Valentine's Day gift for your lover. So that's what we did. We created a little silly commercial for that.
How many ways can a man tell his sweetheart, I love you? Until now, the answer was 3. He could buy her expensive diamonds. He could take her on a tropical vacation. Or he could carve his initials into a tree, then carve a heart, and then carve her initials. But now, he can give her the ultimate expression of his everlasting affection. The Cisco ASR 9000. Because nothing says forever like up to 6.4 terabits per second. Nothing says commitment like up to 400 Gbps per slot. And nothing says I love you like 6 times the mobile backhaul capacity. How many ways can a man say I love you? The answer is 4. The Cisco ASR 9000.
Thank you. That's nice. Thank you. So that was, it's just absurd. It's the same kind of absurdity that you see in late night, but it works. You know, we made it work, and we were able to rattle off a couple of features and benefits that you usually don't ever want to do in a video. And people dug it, you know? And so, look, and here's how we kind of started capturing the story of ROI. Now, look, once you get in the New York Times, look, you get to do a couple more videos without anybody asking, you know? I mean, it's good for us. Now, our market, that's not necessarily our market. I doubt anybody who watched it on the New York Times blog bought a router. They're still, hey, look at this. Let's spend $250,000. But here's what's more important, Network World and Light Reading. I imagine few people in here have ever heard of those publications. To our decision makers who spend money, they're extremely important, and they read them all the time. And the fact that our video ended up there, we're hoping it created goodwill. It's different. It's difficult to measure, but, you know, we know it has 200,000 views on YouTube. And so for a B2B video, that's pretty successful. We didn't promote that. We didn't know. We put it on a blog, and that's it. We didn't. This time I would definitely, I'd buy some ads on Facebook. I'd push it out a bit, you know. I'd try Google. I haven't done that yet. There are a lot of companies that will help you promote a video. Usually there's a minimum to get into those things, but that worked. And so that kind of helped us make the case. So I think this is a good example. This is a good case. If you're trying to sell this internally, if you work in B2B, you know, I can send you the slide and you can show the video and say, look, here's one example. I can show you, also send you one with the main. We did one at IBM on the mainframe. And it increased our blog traffic 25 times. And we got some amazing press, wonderful press. Our chief marketing officer used it in his stump speech. He showed it. It was a new way of thinking, I mean, because we hadn't done comedy before. So I can send you those, too. If my Twitter handle, you can get me there, or just my email address is tim@timwasher.com. Yes, sir. That's a real email address, yes. Yes. How did I get it through committee? I didn't. We didn't go through committee. We did it. Now, those were simpler times back then, my friend. I can't do that. Listen, now it would be a little more tough. So when we were doing these, you know, listen, I forget what my company has now. IBM, we had 81 YouTube channels that had IBM in the name. 81. You know, people in all different countries. And there's good reason for them. Right? There's good reason for some of them, not for all of them. But, you know, when you get anybody making up, you know, and you know, if you're valued at like a $100 billion brand, you know, you don't want to blow that with a couple of bad videos. So that's, listen, there's this constraint coming in on saying, let's put a little more control over this and look at the videos. But I think sometimes it goes a little too far and people try to control too much. That didn't go through a committee meeting. It probably wouldn't be approved today. It wouldn't. I'm sorry, I meant to ask the question online so people could get that, but I think that was clear. Let me just show you. Oh, this is some other coverage it got. So it was in David Meerman Scott, his book. This was a best-selling book, and he wrote this up as a case. So again, that's something that goes in your little ROI thing. You know, again, we can't claim that we've sold anything, but, you know, we're getting some good coverage and exposure for our company, and they're saying we're doing creative and leading things. I didn't even know. I'm on Twitter, and I see this twit pic that C.C. Chapman posted at the blogger. I think it's a WordPress conference. Is that right? So it's a bunch of influential bloggers, and he's showing another one of our videos from this series. And he wrote a book called Content Rules with Ann Hanley. Does anybody know Ann Hanley? And so, look, he's an influencer, and he's showing this at a conference. And so other people are now sharing our message. That's why it's worth trying to make something entertaining, just trying to make it fun, trying to do it a little bit better, and just taking a little risk. It's worth it because other people will tell your story for you. I don't think he's ever handed out brochures for us, and I'm going to talk to him about that, but it's just, you got to show something compelling. This, I'll pull this up here real quick. Let me think. This is a video we did. NBC used the Royal Wedding, you remember that? Let me just show a second of this. NBC used our ASR 9000 to broadcast the wedding, and it was the biggest, you know, 3.2 billion people watched that, I think, right? And so we thought, let's have some fun with it, you know, and we, it's kind of a similar idea, but we figured, well, what if we have a woman who is a royal wedding planner? That's what she does for a living, and she's coming out recommending the ASR 9000, you know, for when you're getting married, you know, at the castle. So I'll just show a short, let me just show a very short clip.
In my line of work, there's no room for surprises.
Constance Regina Fauntleroy, royal wedding planner.
Some clientele will forgive a minor customer service blunder. With monarchy, not so much. But it's tough to pull off a surprise-free wedding.
Turn this down. Look, I'll just talk over this. This is one that didn't really... I had like 5 days to write the script and another 5 days to shoot this. And that's my daughter right there. That joke didn't work. That joke didn't work. There were just not enough time. And it should have been a better script. And now this is the voiceover. This guy's...
Princely, resilient solution for connecting your castle to the TV station, limiting your wedding day surprises to maybe a bitter ex-girlfriend, a court jester's off-color jokes, or a dragon.
So the next time you want to broadcast your special day to one-third of the world's population, be sure to use the Cisco ASR 9000. Because for your royal wedding, there's no room for surprises.
And then we had a little micro site, and we took somebody off to a WordPress page. And, you know, it worked fine. It got some views. It got some press just because it was kind of interesting. But it just, to me, I also learned my lesson. I had a guy who hadn't edited comedy. He's a good editor, but he didn't edit comedy. My partner was not, he was shooting a film, his feature. I'm like, come on, Scott, where are your priorities? And so, you know, it's good to, anyway, you learn these things. And, all right, let me go through just a few more. That is, that woman's Jen Schatz. You may recognize her. She's done some 30 Rock and stuff. And so that's a benefit of being in New York City, is you can find people through your improv group who are funny. You know, but you can still do that. You go to a local comedy club. Not, I wouldn't do a stand-up comedy club. You'll get a lot of filth, which is maybe that's for your market. I don't know. But look for some place that has long-form improv, and you'll find some great writers there who are dirt poor because you make nothing in long-form improv. So that's another great place to. And again, ping me, and I'll tell you some more ideas. Look, let me just real quickly about a concept. This is a product called Videoscape that we launched. This is how we came up with the idea. Basically, in short, it brings all your media together. The idea is, you know, you used to just get media on TV, and now you have other things, right? iPod, iPad, etc. And so the benefit of this is bringing everything together in one place. So we kind of looked at, okay, what are the consequences? What has been the loss here over time? And we figured, well, look at the TV. The TV's probably has felt abandoned. Because the family's spending less time now with you and listening to stuff on Hulu. So we did a support group. And that was the idea. We just got these TVs and we just worked in some of the ideas. It wasn't messaging, but we kind of worked that into what you might, it's called juxtaposition when you're writing in comedy. It's, you take this idea of a support group and then you take this marketing message and you try to put the two together. They don't match too well, and that's what's funny. But that did really well. And so here's how we kind of measured some of the ROI there. It got picked up by a lot of blogs, Jeff Cohen. And Inc. wrote a story about it. So again, some of this, there are two goals for us. One is to show, hey, listen, we're doing some leading things in social media. I doubt this sold any products, but it did get some good press for us. It got our analysts. Here's the deal. If you can get analysts in your press laughing, they're a lot more open to taking that next pitch call. So when your PR folks, that's how you get your PR folks involved. Because PRs, typically, they might say, oh, we don't want negative comments anywhere, because they don't. So that's one way to kind of get your PR folks involved. That's a blank. You know, and just capture all the, get a screenshot of all those tweets. That is, look, just real quickly. Look, I had a spectacular failure, okay, that I don't want to talk about, all right? I don't want to talk about it. No, I don't want to talk about it. But I ended up, like, 2 weeks later in this at Estes Park, Colorado, which is, by the way, where Stephen King wrote The Shining. Not in this chapel, 4 miles from there, at the Stanley Hotel. But I heard this wonderful message there. And if you want to, it's such a wonderful message. And it was like, look, this guy told us a story in a book called Art and Fear. And these professors did this experiment, and they took two groups of students. And they took this group A, and they said, listen, here's what we want you to do. We want you to make the most beautiful clay pot in the world. You got a certain number of days and whatnot, but we want you to make, that's how you're going to be graded on. How wonderful is this pot? How perfect is it? And they let them go off, you know. Then they went to group number two, or group B. Did I say A over here? And they said, here's your goal. We want you to make pots. We don't care what they look like. You're going to be graded on tonnage. Just make pots. They said, go. They gave them the same number of time. Group B came up with the best looking pot by far. And it was just because they experimented. They just tried and they were willing to, they didn't care about failing. They were just trying to produce a pot. And there was some beautiful redemption in there for me. I mean, there was grace because it was like, wow. So failure's not that bad. That's what I did. I took out, I experimented, it blew up. And it's going to happen and it's not fun when it does. But that helped me get back on trying again. So if you want to read more about the blog, if you want to see the text, there's also a podcast there that I didn't do. The guy who, Stephen Wendt, who told the story. Just Google haunted cheeseburgers, and that blog post will come up, and you can read more about it. But it is beautiful. It's a wonderful way to think about how you approach things and to let yourself be cool about failing, because it's hard. It's hard to fail. Let me just close real quick with some data. You know, I get asked a lot about analysis all the time, and I do think there's value in it, but you don't want to overdo it. These are the data, again, on looking at the ROI correlation. And this is a spirograph my six-year-old did. So they both lead you to the same conclusion. So look at some analysis, but just try it. That's the point. All right, look, we got maybe 5 minutes for Q&A if there's a couple of questions. Yes, sir. Oh, and do you mind going to the microphone? Or I could repeat it. What's my role? I get asked that a lot at the office. What are you doing here? That's what they say, though. But my title is Senior Manager of Social Media. And they just, there's some other social media functions in there. Really, it's not supposed to be content creation, but that's what I like to do. And so that's what I do. Yes?
How do you find that balance from funny but also trying not to embarrass or say anything the brand doesn't want to say?
Well, okay, that's excellent. How do you find the balance between, well, not crossing the line? That is a challenge, but here's what you do. Just obviously don't talk about your product. Stay away from that. David Merriman Scott talks about that. That's one of his first rules. Don't talk about your product. Or people. Stay away from people. Don't do that. You know, just stay away from offensive things. What you do want to talk about, a great place to start is a pain point in the industry. Now, what do you do? For a prepaid credit card. I'm sure prepaid credit cards don't have any problems, do they? What's the beef in the prepaid credit card world? What does everybody gripe about?
I don't think I'm allowed to talk about that. Okay. There's a lot of celebrity endorsements and stuff lately where they're using their celebrity to charge a lot of extra fees that a lot of people don't like. There's a lot of bad press for it right now.
Okay, I got some ideas for you.
All right.
But listen, so the first step is you find out what the gripe is, okay? Humor, comedy is pain. Comedy is about pain. It's about being truthful and pain. That's where comedy comes from. So start with a pain point where you're not pointing the finger at your company, of course. You don't necessarily want to point the finger at a competitor. There's risk there, too. But if there's a common gripe that everybody can agree on, particularly your customers, focus on that. Here's the problem, and then look at the consequences of that problem. What does that happen? And then that's where you then apply hyperbole. Blow it up out of the water and just exaggerate it, and there's your concept. Listen, that's a simple formula anybody can do. 2 minutes. Or is that a peace sign? All right, hey, good. It's Austin, you know. What's up? All right. Thank you. All right, so one other question. Yes, sir.
You mentioned a little bit on the Valentine piece about ROI and how you calculated that and how it was successful with all those different posts and the way it was mentioned in media. Going back to the Undertaker piece, you didn't associate it with the brand, you didn't associate it with the product,
yeah.
But yet you said, you know, I hope it's successful.
Yeah.
How are you planning on measuring that success?
So that, I think it's on YouTube. It is on YouTube today. We just don't have it in a blog. And so one will be hits, and I am going to promote it. both on blogs. There's a guy on our team, David Deans, who's a wonderful blogger. And because he's such a good storyteller, people follow him and read his blogs. And you build an audience that way. And that's what this is all about, building an audience. So we'll promote it. And is that what you're asking about specifically? Oh, and then how we measure it.
Right.
Part of it will be hits. Mostly it'll be where will this end up. I'm going to go do the screenshots, just like I did with the support group. If I can find people who tweet it, I'll grab it. People who say something positive about it, I'll grab that and do a screenshot. I'll put it in a little PowerPoint because it doesn't exist unless it's in PowerPoint. You know? I mean, that's how it works. And I'll send a PowerPoint.
So how do viewers associate it with the brand?
Oh, I'm sorry if I missed your question.
Well, no, I mean, because that's the question that would be asked of me by the executives.
They don't.
Say,
right now they don't.
They know it's, yeah.
This is kind of a no fingerprints approach. So seriously, I want it to be successful. And once it's successful, then I'm going to go make the case and say, guys, this worked. Let's do a series here of these inventors and find fun stories and maybe associate our brand with it. But right now it's a test. You know, the documentary did okay. It wasn't a YouTube hit. So we try something else. Okay, how can we approve it and try it again? This, a buddy of mine, Ron Schneier, he just said, you know, you just keep trying and test it on YouTube and, you know, do new things. So that's what it is. So, yeah, all of these. I mean, I just put them out there and we see what happens. And then, and you know, if it's a bomb, you try not to, you know, you distance yourself from it. I don't know who put that. How'd that get out? I didn't see the file. but hopefully I can make the case to do a series of that. I think there's legs there. Sure, yeah. Yes, everybody should have social media guidelines. Everybody should have social media guidelines, and we have those. But actually, I don't think ours say anything specifically about how you manage a personal brand. I had very little budget when I started here, and I was told, we want you to speak at 12 conferences this year. Okay? So I just put together this, you know, a presentation that's funny that I thought people would invite me to come speak at conferences, you know, if I said, you know, the business case for nonsense. So I'm attached to that personally, but that's how I justify it.
So social media right now is free, supposedly, right? Except for the time that we invest in it.
Right,
And YouTube videos and or everything else that's attached to that. Do you foresee in the future marketing departments or corporations actually saying, okay, now we can invest in it. We see that it works. We see that it is not going away.
We'll get there. But it's a long way away. And part of it is there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work out there. And that I get asked these questions that you're asking all the time. Why are you doing this? What, I don't understand what value this has for our company. And I still think we're too early to tell. We really are. YouTube had their 5 anniversary back in April, I think. We're too early at this. But I think it's already happening. Like, right. Our company is spending, you know, you can buy a branded YouTube channel. And you give Google $250,000. And so, you know, those are happening. It's starting to take money away from the traditional marketing advertising budget. Okay? But everybody's still experimenting. Nobody really knows yet.
Right.
But I think that will happen, yes.
Thanks.
All right. Well, so I'll take another question. We've got to get out of the room here pretty soon. Oh, we're done. We're shutting it down. Listen, thank you for your time. I'm happy. Thank you. Feel free to send me an email or on Twitter, and if you have another question, I'd be happy to answer a question. Or even just send me, I'd try to help you come up with a concept for comedy if you want. Just say, here's our product, this is what we do, and I'll see if I can come up with an idea for you. Oh, it's Tim Washer, @TimWasher.